All right, so we're switching a big topic here because we're coming back to tokamaks. That's partly my fault because I couldn't be here on Monday in time for my initial schedule for this talk. So I thank the organizer for being flexible about this. So what I want I will talk to you about a work I did during my PhD thesis in France in CA. Now I'm in University of Montreal, so this is a work I did previously in the last years. Basically, this is a very nice picture, but it's actually a movie. So it's a movie of gyrokinetic turbulence in the tokamak that we simulated with the Gisela code in Cadarache in France. So what you see here is all the isocontrols of the electrostatic potential. So yellow is positive and blue negative. And so around those contours, the heat is flowing outwards the system from the center. Is it gutted in the center? Because we do not resolve what's exactly happening in the center. And so this is one of the main way tokamak is expelling heat from the center. That's something we want to prevent ideally because we want to confine the energy in the center to have a sustainable fusion device. What you directly see in this picture is that on top of those structures there are clearly shear flows that develop in the tokamak. So you see that here you're rotating this way, here that way, and you have different shear layers that are occurring at different radial position here. And what I will be interested in this talk is try to understand how those shear layers interact with the turbulence and how can we improve the confinement of the energy inside the tokamak sense to those. So here's the outline of my talk. Those shear layers will eventually at some point transfer to being transport barriers. So I will like to give a short overview, very simple overview. I'll apologize for those who are familiar with tokamaks, but I think I need to do this short overview to help you understand why we study transport barriers in tokamaks. Then I will give a brief overview too of the gyrokinetic formalism we're using to describe the turbulent transport, the heat turbulent transport in those devices. Then we'll discuss how to impose shear flow in a self-consistent gyrokinetic simulation and how a transport barrier can eventually emerge from such a simulation. So, very simple, very briefly, a tokamak is like a big donut that is eventually squeezed or whatever. For this talk, we will only consider tokamaks with a circular meridional plane here. So, the base of the design of a tokamak is that you have concentric magnetic surfaces around which these magnetic field lines unroll. And I'm going to define here important quantities like the radius. The small radius here that starts from the center of the tokamak where you want to have your fusion reactions happening. And I will show profile like this in a normal radius. So zero here is the center of the tokamak and one will be while you hit the wall of the machine. And the goal, as I already said, is to confine energy in the center. So if you put a pressure profile or a temperature profile as a function of this radius, the classical thing you get is such a profile that is high temperature, high pressure at the center, as it is decreasing as you reach the wall. And it's been observed experimentally that you can develop self-organization in various places in this tokamak and create transport barriers that will raise the pressure and temperature level in the center, and then potentially increase your performance as a fusion device. So there are two kinds of transport barriers that are fairly different. There are external transport barriers here that are linked to a particular configuration near the walls that I will not describe at all in this talk. Well, in this talk, we'll be interested in the internal transport barriers. So these are transport barriers where you have a very steep profile of temperature or pressure in the place where the turbulence is happening, so in the middle of the tokamak. And of course, all these studies are very important in order to get sustainable fusion devices. So any way to control those efficiently would be very profitable. So what are the mechanisms to drive those transport barriers in tokamak? So we have two main mechanisms that we know from experiments that work to drive those. The first one is linked to the magnetic topology, so the way the magnetic field is unrolling on the magnetic surface is as a function of the little radius. So here are such profiles. This is a so-called safety profile, the Q profile. So here you have a very small number of toroidal turn compared to polyhedral turns. And as you go outward, you inverse this ratio. And so you can design with your external cores very different magnetic topologies. And it's been observed that topologies where you have a minimum of this Q profile are can be very profitable to drive transport barriers. And these are actually simulations, but there are many experiments where it's clear that that's happening. So if you have an inverse profile like this, you get in the middle of the plasma, a steepening in your temperature profile, and you create a transport barrier. Q is a safety profile, so it's the way it's basically the number of turns the magnetic field line does in longitude to do one turn in latitude. In a one, well, it's not latitude, but on the meridional plane, right? So. You can understand this as a magnetic shear, actually. And you can understand that if you have a magnetic shear, you can eventually linearly stabilize your modes that are driving the turbulence. And that's why you would expect that you can reduce the turbulence locally and maybe create a transport barrier. And this can be viewed also as if you put the different resonant modes that are the modes that are supposed to be the most unstable, that are supposed to transport heat basically outward of your system. And if these are those dots here, if you plot them, you see that for reversed profiles, you have a gap of resonant nodes near the minimum. And this has long been thought of a reason of why such profile can drive a transport barrier. In fact, when you consider the whole turbulence spectrum and you consider also linearly stable modes, but that are excited by those resonant modes, it happens that it doesn't work. Look, so this scenario clearly works experimentally, but today it's not clear what is the exact mechanism that allows the creation for a transport barrier. The other mechanism is linked to velocity shear. So this shear can be in the toroidal direction with a transfer of parallel momentum, for instance, from the walls. Or in the polyhedral direction, this is generally thought of as a E cross B shear. And so this is equivalent to polarize the plasma, as it will be made clear in the following of this talk. And those are observed both for external transport barriers and internal transport barriers in various experiments. So we'll focus here on the effect of such a shear on the creation of transport barriers in a turbulent medium. So again, what happened is our system, you have a heat source in the center of the plasma because it's where you expect your fusion reaction to occur. And then this heat source drives mean profiles across the minor radius. So this is for an example of you have a heat source located here and you drive thanks to turbulence or on account of turbulence, depends on how you see that, such a mean profile of temperature. To this temperature is associated a mean profile of E cross B shear. So this is in red here, and I normalized it to the linear growth rate of the mean of the maximal linear growth rate of the resonant modes in the simulation box. And so you see that you can eventually here near the heat source. Raise this shear up to 10 times the linear growth rate. But in the middle of the box, it's more of the one of the same order as the linear growth rate of your modes. So question is, how do you drive transport barriers? Well, obviously, you need a bigger shear. So this is another bit maximal example. Maybe you have an E cross B shear, a velocity shear that is located here that is very high, up to 50 times the linear growth rate of your modes, of your most stable modes at this position. And you see that eventually you can modify the mean profile you're establishing in your simulation and drive a steepening. I mean, though this is a small steepening, but you can drive a steepening of your temperature profile. So you see, experimentally, we know that we can drive such transport barriers either with an externally imposed shear. So you try to modify the E cross B shear that is developing in the turbulent medium by coupling the plasma with certain types of waves. Sorry. But you can also think that maybe in some situation you can develop transport barriers spontaneously thanks to the intrinsic shear that is developed by the turbulence itself in the medium. The question is, how do those shear flow interact with turbulence to allow the transport barrier creation? And that's what I'm going to talk about. So to study this, we need to be able to describe the whole turbulent state of the plasma across the whole tokamak. So this is done with a gyrokinetic code, because the most simplest instability that is driving such the heat transport outwards is called the ATG ion temperature gradient instability that is driving a certain turbulence. And this has to be described with a gyrokinetic equation, here a kind of Vlasov. So you have a total derivative of your distribution function of your ion that is counterbalanced by the collision effects. And you need to couple this with a quasi-neutrality equation. So generally speaking, if this right this way, you have mainly the Laplacian of the electrostatic potential here that is equal to the sum of the gyro average gyro-average distribution function. Here in this talk, we'll only consider adiabatic electrons, meaning that all the electrons are instantaneously adapting to any perturbation in the electrostatic potential field. So this is really a kind of a minimal set of equations to study this. But what's really mandatory here is that we need to describe the whole simulation domain, because we need to be able to describe how large-scale transport event can eventually interact with the development of a local transport barrier. And this, we need to be able to describe properly boundary condition, because in the real tokamak, what's really driving the mean profiles is a flux. It's not a temperature difference or anything. So you need to really to be able to impose a flux to your model, and to treat the equilibrium profiles as well as the fluctuation with no scale separation, because we will see that eventually turbulence is able to develop a transport barrier. So you need not to decompose your mean profile into a mean that is not involving end fluctuation, of course. For those who are familiar with this kind of modeling, we are using a rho star of 1/150, rho star being the ion Larmor radius normalized to the size of the machine, and a new star equal 0.1, which is a new star is the collision frequency normalized to the bounce frequency. So this is kind of a collision frequency. So what happened with such simulations? So those are average over the longitudinal direction. And longitudinal direction, and I plot as a function of the minor radius here. So here is the heat source, and here would be the wall. And as a function of time, I plot the radial turbulent heat flux. So you see that there are large-scale transport events that are occurring all the time. And so the heat is transported with kind of bursts outwards by the turbulence itself. And with this turbulence, there are shear flows that are associated. So here I overplot the contour of the E cross B shear with the solid contour being positive shear and the dotted contours here being negative shear. And you see that somehow it's greatly influenced by all the bursty events that you observe. But you also note that there is a clear organization here. You have all, in this position always positive shear, always negative shear here, always positive shear here. So you have kind of a staircase that is starting kicking to appear here. And the other So the other regime, we observe those or the so-called Crosby stair curve that Pat talked about on Monday. And so when you're driving the system close to the instability threshold, you can have such a state occurring where you have local steepening of the temperature gradient associated with a strong Crosby shear that self-consistently develop thanks to the turbulence. So this is a very interesting regime, but in neither of those cases, there is a strong, well-identified barrier that creates, as you would expect from the experiments. So what we decided to do, knowing those two regimes exist, is try to mimic some experiments where you externally impose a shear. And this is not that easy to do with a self-consistent gyrokinetic simulation. So what are the solutions here? Well, the simple thing, first thing to do would be just consider that is always some E-Crosby shear that is present in the plasma. So you take your gyrokinetic equation and you, at each time step, you just add a shear profile. So this is very simple to do, and we try to do that. And this is the result. So in blue, these are the profile of the E-Crosby shear at two times in the simulation. So you see that with no external E-Crosby shear. So you see that you develop a certain level of shear. You start with zero, of course, and then you develop a certain structure. When you try to impose the E-Crosby shear, you start with this profile here, a very strong shear. And as you let the simulation evolve, in fact, the turbulence reacts and screens the shear you're trying to impose. So in the end, at the end of the day, you just lose what you wanted to impose, and it doesn't work because it's not really self-consistent with the description of the plasma. What other people try to manage to do is just to include a shear flow in the equilibrium distribution function. But as I said before, we do not consider a scarce separation between equilibrium and fluctuation here. So this is a method we cannot use with our way of modeling the turbulent transports in tokamak. Lastly, we can just design a new source term in the gyrokinetic equation that is supposedly mimicking the experimental setup. So you take the previous gyrokinetic equation and you just add a source term that will hopefully develop a self-consistent E-Crosby shear at some particular location in the simulation. And as you will see, this works very well. So how do we manage to do that? Any source term of this kind here will generally act on the full distribution function. You have to give a certain form so that it achieves what you want. The first thing to do is to impose a certain radial shape, because we want it to impose a shear at a certain position in the plasma, not anywhere. So we add just a simple Gaussian profile here to the source that we are redeveloping. Next, we wanted to really impose some vorticity here so that we can develop an E-Crosby shear. And we don't want it to add momentum or matter or even energy, ideally. We just like to study what is the effect of a shear. So we decompose this source in terms of polynomials. And we end up by integrating this against the various moments. You can get evolution equation for momentum, mass, energy, etc. And so we end up with this formula here, that is the formula of a pure vorticity source. And this is what I show here, in fact. So if I integrate this source over the phase, the velocity space, and integrate it against velocity in velocity space, et cetera, et cetera, I get those curves here. So you get, for the momentum, which is the dotted red line, you see it's exactly zero. So our source does not add any momentum to the plasma. For the energy, you see that you have two shapes that compensate, so that the total energy, which is in blue, is exactly zero. So our source term does not add any energy, but it adds energy into the parallel direction, and it removes energy into the perpendicular direction. And in fact, this is very interesting because this comes from the physics. This comes from the gyrokinetic sets of equation. If you want to have a pure source of vorticity, there is no other way as to have an anisotropic heating cooling that develops in your system. You could get rid of this if you allow your source to impose a certain certain heating rate, for instance. So now we are happy with this, this source. It does what we want to do, and we try to see how it's, how the plasma reacts to such a source. So here is a formal simulation where you have the bursty transport events that occur in the plasma. And at this point in the simulation, I switch on my, my vorticity source. And you see that very rapidly, the heat transport just stops near the source location here. But at some point, eventually, there is a huge burst occurring that is restoring a certain state in the plasma, and it starts again over it starts again and again. You reduce again the turbulent transport and etc. And to this, of course, there are shear flows that develop. So again, I overplot the shear contours, and you see that at the source location, you develop the shear that you wanted to have. To study if you can develop a transport barrier or not. But when this very large heat burst occurs, you completely suppress the shear that you are trying to develop, even though the source is still acting in the gyro kinetic equation. And if I do the same plot, but this time showing the inverse temperature lead scale, so this is the redder you are, the more the steeper your temperature profile is. You see that on the left, on the source position, you develop a transport barrier. Here it's very clear, here again, that is quasi-periodically relaxing. So we managed to find a way to actually see the development of a transport barrier in the turbulent tokamak, but we have a drawback effect that is just destroying it. So why is that? So before going to the explaining you all this, I'm just showing you this little movie that is very interesting to understand what's happening in our simulation. So the dashed line represents roughly the position of the source I'm trying to impose. So this starts just when I start to switch on my source of vorticity, and you see that the plasma is highly sheared here, and that you completely suppress the turbulence because of this shear and the heat transport. You see that there are modes that are trying to grow around the shear, the transport barrier location. And at some point, you'll see that the plasma is just slowing down and just a large burst that is completely destroying the transport barrier that was created. But since the source is still acting, at some point, you will redevelop a transport barrier at the same position, and it starts again. And it basically never stops. We run this simulation for a long time, and it just continues like this. So what happens? We tried hard to understand what was happening because it was unclear. When you have such a shield flow, I mean, it's clear that it completely suppressed the turbulence there, and so it has no reason, obvious reason at first, why the turbulence should come back. So here I plot as a function of time. This is a short time window around just before one large burst occur and the transport barrier is destroyed. So these are this is taken at this radial location here, so very close to the transport barrier. And you see that the modes that you expect that to have the most amplitude are actually very small here and are constantly decreasing until they reach a certain level and start increasing very rapidly. So there is ITG mode. There are ITG modes that should be stabilized by the shear I'm developing, that grow and destroy the transport barrier. And actually, you can see that in the gradient of temperature here that grows at the same position. And at some point where my modes start to have a sufficient amplitude, it starts to be destabilized and just come back to the value before there was any transport barrier occurring. So this is just a snapshot to illustrate the growth of the mode. You can see that there's a typical mode here growing. This is a plot of the distribution function for a high peril velocity. So that's nice. We know that we clearly see that there is an ITG mode growing on the inner side of the barrier that erodes the temperature gradient and suppresses the barrier. But we still don't know why this mode is growing. And since we are imposing a very strong shear, you can imagine that it's simply that you have a certain sort of a shear instability that is just destroying itself. But in fact, when you look at the time sequence, this happens at very different value of the shear, and it's highly unlikely that it's due to a shear instability. Rather, we have a rather better explanation, I think, for what's happening here. So if we plot now over a longer time in the simulation, the two temperatures, so perpendicular and parallel temperature as a function of time at the position where the mode grow, you see that because of the vorticity we're trying to impose, we're also imposing a strong temperature anisotropy. And so you see that you have a growth of parallel temperature, and the anisotropy is very big here. And at some point here, it's where the barrier is destroyed. So the anisotropy is lowered. And afterwards, you rebuild your barrier, and it's the same. The parallel temperature is very high, and the perpendicular temperature is decreasing. And again and again. And in fact, it occurred to us that when you try to see what's the linear threshold for the ATG mode to grow, when you have such a strong anisotropy, the threshold for such modes is completely changed. And so we recompute the ATG linear threshold as a function of the anisotropy. So here in the y-axis, you have the temperature anisotropy and the gradient of the temperature anisotropy on the x-axis. And so this color here are exactly what's happening here. So the green line corresponds to this evolution, the red line to this evolution, and the blue line here. And you see that when you reach the highest value of anisotropy, you are really exciting a lot your ATG mode. So in fact, what's happening in our simulations that we try to impose a shield flow. We saw that because of the gyrokinetic set of equation, this is necessarily accompanied by a temperature anisotropy. And this temperature anisotropy completely changed the driving of our instable mode and just destroy itself. So we have a nice loop to understand what's happening in the simulation. You start with the turbulent state with low velocity shear. You add your vorticity source that is at the same time creating a shield flow and an isotropic temperature. The shield flow quench the turbulence, and the transport barrier is created. With this transport barrier, you have an increase of your temperature gradient, of course. But the anisotropic temperature you're developing is lowering the linear instability threshold. You have modes that eventually grow at some point and then transport the vorticity and heat to come back to this initial state. And you have a quasi-periodic loop that is going on like this. We can ask what the effect of this is. This really robust in our simulation, because what I've shown for the moment is only one simulation. So what we did is keeping all the parameters of the simulation the same and just increase the heat source at the center of the plasma. So that what that does is that you drive your system harder and harder, and you have a much more turbulent state. So here you see that for a certain vorticity source, you have very longly stable barriers before they get destroyed. And as you increase the background turbulent state, basically, those barriers live less and less longer. And at some point, you can eventually reach a state when the vorticity source is not able to compete with the turbulent transport of vorticity, and you cannot impose any Crosby shear. So basically, this is very consistent with some results from Bayer et al. In 2007. So this is a very nice way of seeing that you have this competition and all sources indeed trying to impose a mini Crosby shear. And so I'm reaching the conclusion here. So what we obtained for the very first time, that was a very long search to get such a transport barrier related to an externally induced shield flow in a gyrokinetic simulation, so those are very, very heavy simulations, 5D simulation. We propose a new mechanism that is based on a physical strong temperature anisotropy that develops because of the externally induced shield flow. And actually, what's nice with that is that our result promotes a renewed interest in some old experimental setup where the plasma was externally paralyzed, for example, with ion Bernstein wave. And so with our setup, we suggest that we determine much better the temperature anisotropy that is occurring in the tokamak plasma. And with that, we could have some means of controlling unstable transport, internal transport barriers. So of course, this can seem a bit far-fetched, but this could have very wide implication in terms of controlling transport barrier in the tokamaks. Now, we have several perspectives for this work. The vorticity source, as I said, is inherently coming with an anisotropy of temperature, but the waves that you're launching in real experiments could well deposit also energy with the vorticity. So we are currently investigating what it would give if you allow your source to heat or cool a bit the plasma where you deposit the vorticity. In fact, initially I wanted to have those results for this meeting, but due to the queue for such simulations that are on average 2 million node hours for each simulation, so these are very expensive simulations with 10 billions of grid points. So unfortunately, I couldn't make it for this conference. And then we can also think of developing stable barriers in such simulation, because you see that the mode that grows and the turbulence that is developing is due to the anisotropy of temperature that accompanies the source. So you can switch on and off your source of vorticity at some points and just stay at the level where the temperature anisotropy that is developing at the transport barrier location is just below the threshold, so you do not drive any unstable mode there, but still you get a transport barrier thanks to the externally imposed E-Crosby shear. Thank you.
Thank you, Antoine. Plenty of time for questions.
Did you look at if you have a dependence on the Q profile if you inject the vorticity on minimum?
That's one of the things we want to investigate too. This is for a parabolic profile, so very simple profile, and we intend to modify that to see how it influences that. But no, I don't have the answer for the moment.
Okay, if I may ask one more. So and do you inject vorticity in the poloidal plane or in the perpendicular plane? Is it the rotation, I mean?
Yeah, so this is in the poloidal plane.
Okay, there's a question here.
So you discussed how the increased temperature and anisotropy can lower the instability threshold for the ion temperature gradient instability.
Yes.
Now, temperature and anisotropy itself can be a free energy source for instabilities. So in the solar wind, fire hose and mirror instabilities,
yes,
are very important. So have you checked those?
Yes. Actually, this was our initial guess. That's such thing were happening there, but it's not the case.
Okay.
So this is really the ITG instability that's occurring.
Yeah.
The experiments on ITBs, as you know, make ITBs by reverse shear or the dip in the Q and also toroidal rotation.
Yes.
Now, why haven't you guys have the collision operator?
Yes.
You should be able to put a toroidal momentum source.
Yes.
In the code and go for that, I think.
We do have such a source in the code. Actually, that was a project of one of my fellow PhD student when I was student there, and well, it's still under investigation, but that's one of the projects we're working on too.
I mean, that would be the most, shall we say, the most faithful to the experiments,
yeah,
in terms of actually making something that corresponds to an experimentally observed barrier.
Are there any more questions? Michael.
Could you please tell a non-specialist what an iron Bernstein wave is?
What? Iron Bernstein wave, okay. Well, actually, I'm not a specialist of those two because I never did those are old experiments. So I'm afraid I will not be very helpful for you there. It's kind of a radio frequency wave that you try to couple the plasma with antennas through the walls. And then you can control the, you have a wave that is propagating and you control where it bounces and eventually deposit things.
If I may, since I'm the et al. In the Craddock et al. Paper that you mentioned on that, the ion Bernstein wave is a high frequency wave. It's running at around the harmonic of the ion cyclotron frequency, propagating perpendicular to the magnetic field, and it depends rather sensitively on ion temperature. Is a simple way of understanding it. It has some correspondence with actually a kinetic version of a spiral density wave. But it's distinct from ITG and drift waves, Michael, in that it is up at the cyclotron frequency rather than far below it.
Ion cyclotron frequency.
Yes.
So you're directly heating the ions.
That's the idea. But it also can produce a Reynolds stress directly. So the idea
of several people was to use RF waves of various sorts to drive shear flows, exploiting the peaked absorption profiles at the resonances and so forth.
That would be wonderful if you could only do that.
What?
Then you'd have just shear wherever you wanted.
Well, it's of course not as simple as that, because the plasma in part decides where the resonances will be. At least it negotiates with us. There has been some evidence of some success with this in old experiments. The so-called PBXM in PPPL many years ago. But the experiment was terminated without going further.
Final chance to ask questions. Going. Michael.
Well, you did say that you were assuming adiabatic electrons. Does that make much difference to any of this? I mean, the real electrons are not quite adiabatic, are they?
No, they are not. And that's very possible that it makes a difference, of course. We are currently trying to move this code towards electromagnetic with treating kinetically electrons, but it's very difficult things to do, so we are getting there at some point.
Okay, let's thank Antoine again and all of this afternoon's speakers.
So before you all head out, the conference is now officially over. Steve and I would like to thank you all for participating. I think it was a terrific conference with a real feast of ideas, or perhaps it was like trying to drink from a fire hose. I'm certainly going to be pondering things for many weeks. Let me put on another hat that I wear, which is that I've been on the advisory board for the KITP for the past 4 years. I'm going to be rotating off shortly. And we're always looking for good program proposals. Writing a program proposal is not difficult. It's a few pages. And we gladly accept pre-proposals. If you find this, if you found this very useful, please consider doing that. I'm especially interested in encouraging more programs and conferences like this that are involving fluids and various aspects of fluids and geophysics and astrophysics. So if you're interested in doing that, I'd be happy to talk to you about that. So, plasmas, yes, sorry. Plasmas and climate, all those good things.